What's happening, Airbnb world? You're listening to Airbnb Tales, episode number 2. Welcome, this is your host Kobe, and I'm going to take you guys on a journey filled with exciting and insane stories of Airbnb guests, hosts, and personalities from around the world. This is not your regular Airbnb podcast, man, where we only talk about Airbnb, but we also look into their lives, their stories, their experiences, what they have to tell, and what they have going forward in their lives. On that note, let's start today's show. We have with us a guest who has taught me personally many a thing about life and why we need to stand up for what we believe in. And we have with us Andreas Mandela from Amsterdam. This is actually a second series of Talking Life with Andreas, and he's been doing some really cool stuff ever since November 2017. And few of us would have easily given up and gone back home, but this guy just stayed put, did his stuff, and now things are coming together for him. So Andreas, how you been, man? It's been a while.
Yeah, I've been really, really good. I'm in Bangalore for the fifth time now. I'm sorry I didn't visit you the other two, three times, but I'm doing really well.
Cool. So you're finally coming to a close with this very exciting project that you undertaken with your time in India. Let's just get straight to the project. Tell us what this project is all about.
Well, the project is about me going through the amazing country of India and capturing the amazing development that this country has been having in the past two decades. And I interview very inspiring people in the areas of education, healthcare, and urban planning. And that way I try to show a little bit of innovation and a productive side of India, basically.
Nice, sounds pretty interesting. So how did you get this project rolling? Like, did you structure everything, or did you just go with the flow of everything?
Well, the funny part is that I had structured everything, and then I completely got rid of that structure the moment when I started doing everything myself. And then it became almost an improvisational act. So everything I did it with the baggage that I had from the structure that I had before. So that made the improv really good, but there was no structure. Like I went all around the country. Sometimes you didn't get an appointment, and then you had time on your hands, and I would just go somewhere else and then come back later, which is not very structural, but that's life of a documentary filmmaker. Like, you can't expect things to go your way all the time, and especially not in India. That way you just have to go with the flow most of the time and try to get the best material that you can. I prepared my interviews, but I did not plan the whole thing out.
So you met personalities like Dr. R. A. Mashelkar, Narayan Murthy, Shashi Tharoor. I mean, the list goes on and on. Like, so that's pretty cool. But just tell us how did you end up with an interview with them? Like, a lot of people would just be fascinated that, okay, I get to talk with these people. But then to get there and go talking with them, like to approach them, you need certain levels, right? The barriers come in between. So how did you break those barriers, or can you give us a strategy? And
I just needed them for the project, and I didn't want their autograph. So if you are on the level where you you know, both can add value to each other's, project. He can, have a stage where he or she can have a say. And I want to tell a story. And that comes together, and you just email them.
Okay, so your project was the crucial point where...
Of course. Yeah, yeah. That's why you approach them. Like, okay. I did not come here to, do a tour of famous people. Otherwise, I would have also chosen other people, actually. I would have picked out all the Bollywood actors. But...
So you just selected few personalities that really have an impact on developing India.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked... Like, the goal was to show the development of India through generations.
Okay.
So I have people who are contributing to India's development from all age groups, basically. So there are also many amazing young people in it. And some of these young people will become them in 20 or 30 years, maybe even before that. So it's not so much about overcoming barriers or things like that. It's more knowing what you want, why you want it, and then you can get whoever you want for your project.
Yeah. So the goal of the project, in a way, was to spread awareness about developing India, and also for it was kind of a self project. You did it for yourself, and what do you think? Tell me, do you think the same or?
The initial motivation behind the project was that I fell in love with India a long time ago, like 2-3 years ago when I came here. I really it really hit me, you know, its richness and the lifestyle, the adventure, the complete change of perception about life and everything. Like it makes you confront things that, you know, you sometimes have to suppress or have the ability to suppress because you live in your small bubble in Amsterdam, for me at least. And it just completely changes who you are. That was the basis of basically my stay in India. And then on top of that, I thought India was underexposed. It doesn't get the respect it deserves in the world. It's gonna have 20% of the world population. Nobody's talking about it. And also what has been said about it didn't quite add up to what I felt about it. And I just wanted to change that, to change the perception about India a little bit by making a documentary about all the other things that are also happening that people are not talking about, which are actually very positive things that are happening and very inspiring things that are happening.
There's so much of negativity going around, like there's so many rapes, and that's all people talk about. Even the West, they feel a little, they feel that India is a dangerous country and not safe for women in general. And apart from all this negative, there is this positive side to India that not many people talk about. So that's kind of cool that you're getting into that part of it.
Yeah, it's like even the rapes statistically are not, as much as you would think. Like it's a complete politicized topic, but on the other hand, female travelers do get, harassed here, and it's really annoying, and that's something that India has to deal with themselves. But it's not as if when you go to India you will get raped, what most people think now.
Coming back to the project, what do you feel were the hardest parts of this project? Like, did you what were the biggest obstacles you overcome, like trying to get this project together?
Yeah, biggest obstacle was deciding to do it all by myself. That was the biggest obstacle. So at first, I wanted to get a crew together. I wanted to get a proper funding and everything, and that didn't go the way I expected. And then I was standing there alone, like, okay, am I gonna do this project by myself with my mobile phone, or am I going to wait around more and see if I can get a production company to help me with arranging a budget so that I can make a proper documentary, BBC, National Geographic style? But I thought that would not be realistic in the position that I was at that time. I was here on my savings. I wanted to make the film, so I already had appointments with Dr. Tharoor and Mr. Murthy and Ms. Mazumdar at that time. And I thought, like, wow, I have those dates and I'm just going to show up. Like, I'm just going to do it. And that was the biggest obstacle, to just accept the fact that it was going to be a different project than I envisioned in the first time. And then after you do that, you actually discover that it's better than the original idea, actually. So that was the biggest barrier. But now I'm in the middle of the biggest barrier, because now I have to edit the project, which is way more difficult than what I was doing. Like, making appointments and going to the appointment and interviewing, that's not a big deal. I do that all day. I was just talking to people and recording it. But to make that into a cohesive story, that's what I'm worried about right now. So much material. How am I going to structure it? Will I get a good editor to help me with it? Will I be able to finish the whole thing in India before my visa expires? Because I had a year-long visa and I'm on my last, 80 days or something. So those are the things that I'm worried about right now. And I'm worried about my crowdfunding video that I want to put up right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So you basically didn't get any help throughout the project. I mean, it seems like a pretty huge task, but to film the documentary, everything, you did it all on your own.
I did everything by myself, but I did get help. But the help was more from friends and acquaintances. And it was more like a kind of a support factor in the way that they helped me with a place to stay. They helped me, drop me at the train station if an Uber took too long. Like, they just, like, they kind of made things easier for me. That's what they did. Like, I did not have like another crew member on board that I could always like support on. But whenever I needed like a nudge or a push in the right direction, or you know, get a plane ticket or something like that, or a train ticket, people would help me out. Yeah, definitely. So
nice.
I did get a lot of help and support from all of my friends.
So what kind of equipment did you use to film your documentary?
Yeah, just my phone.
Just your phone.
Yeah, but that's not the kicker of the film. Like, everybody shoots on an iPhone. Like, Ridley Scott shoots on an iPhone now. Steven Soderbergh, like, they all shoot their Hollywood movies on an iPhone. They put awesome lenses on the iPhone.
So did you use a lens as well?
No, I did not do anything with that.
And what about the audio quality and everything? Did you have a microphone connected to the iPhone or something?
No. If I would change anything, I would have bought or would have borrowed a microphone from somebody, and I would have taken that. But yeah, the sound is all right. It's not the best, but I need a good sound designer now to basically fix the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So now you're right in your editing phase where you're just finishing the project. So are you going to do the editing all by yourself, or are you going to hire someone to finish the editing for you?
No, I need an editor. That's why I'm doing the crowdfunding campaign.
And also, you said that your visa is about to expire. So how did you manage to have a visa for so long in India, especially since Indian visa for foreigners pretty difficult to get? And
no, it's not. It's very easy to get a visa.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's not a problem.
Okay.
It's hard to get a working visa here.
Okay.
That's difficult. But India is one of the easiest countries to get a visa from, and it's so easy that India is actually tired of it. So,
right.
They put in this rule that every 3 months I have to leave the country.
So every 3 months you kept leaving the country?
Yeah. So I had to go to like Nepal, I had to go to Sri Lanka, and just to get a stamp, you know. It was not even to get a new visa, it was just to get a stamp. And
so did you have any interesting stories since, November was the time you were in our place, starting to, you know, interview people? And did you have like any interesting stories from November till April, like till now, which you could convey to our listeners? I've seen a couple of Instagram stories where you waited for I think more than 24 hours, right, for a train. I'm not sure. And you boarded the general class in trains. So that is kind of a experience not many people have. So probably convey some stories to our listeners.
Yeah, so like after I interviewed Dr. Tharoor, I basically went to Nepal, because I had to get a stamp, like my visa was about to expire. And my friend was coming from the Netherlands, like he was going to visit me for a month. And we would basically arrive a bit at the same time, or I would even be back in Delhi to pick him up sooner. So I took the train to Gorakhpur, and it was like a good, you know, 24-hour train. Actually, it's a pretty long ride, if you imagine. It's pretty close to the border, but still, it's a very long train ride. And from Gorakhpur, then you take the bus or, you know, a taxi to the border. Then you get a stamp and then come back. That was the plan. And when I arrived in Gorakhpur, I already discovered, like, wow, this is not even like a proper city. And I really have to see how I'm going to fix all this, because I think that it's going to take much longer than I expected. So I asked these guys, like, how long does it take to get to the border? Yeah, it takes around that many hours. And I thought, like, no, my train, because I really booked, like, just up and down, you know. So my train was leaving that same day, 6 hours from my arrival time. So I discovered that the ride to the border took like two, 3 hours instead of the, you know, very short 1.5 hour that was told to me before that. But I had to go, so I just took a bus. First, they were trying to get me into a cab that was way too expensive, and not many people have to go to the border from that place, so it was also very tough to fill up the cab and share the expenses. And then I just thought, I'll just get a new train or something. I'll just find my way back to Delhi. And then at that moment, when I wanted to buy a new ticket to Delhi, the guy said, no, the train has been delayed for 8 hours.
Oh.
So I said, that's perfect. Then I just leave tonight. I go to Nepal right now, and I'll see you guys later. So I went, came back, and hung out. I was still on time, obviously. But then all of a sudden, I started seeing, like, okay, that's 9 hours. And then for basically 16 hours, they kept on postponing the train by an hour. So you would never know when you would go.
And you were always in the railway station.
Yeah, like you were there because they postponed it by an hour. So you can't like leave because it can leave in an hour.
Yeah.
You know, so they kept on fucking around and kept you there. And after like a couple of, time changes, I just started sleeping.
Okay.
So I just, I just fell asleep and just trusted the fact that it was because of the snow and that it would take a really long time. And then I got into a train that came like 30 hours late, and I was basically on a train station for like 30 hours on a metal bench, drinking some coffee and some chips and a couple of aloo puffs. That's it.
You're all alone at the time?
Yeah, you're alone. Yeah, of course. And then my friend arrived, and I actually was later than he was. And then an amazing month of fun and work started.
This was in February?
Yeah, that was Feb. Feb was like the finishing month almost. So in Feb, I was doing the things that that I couldn't arrange before. So like, even my friend had to sometimes, you know, be by himself, because I actually had to go to Ahmedabad to meet Anil Gupta there at the Institute of Management. And that's a good bus ride. You know, that's 18 hours. So that was in the beginning, and then I had a really nice holiday, which was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Like 2-3 weeks, yeah.
So did you use Airbnb at the time?
No. No, Airbnb, I used it here in Bangalore. Yeah, if there's something that I learned, like, that's why I like the way that I did it is because of what I had to learn and do to and cut costs and be smart about things. And when I met you, I was still in the, everything's gonna be all right, and I have my savings and this and that. And I basically never slept in hostels until that moment. And at some point I just discovered, like, I can't be paying these Airbnb fees anymore, because Airbnb is, it's not the cheapest in India.
Yeah.
And you can stay in a hostel here in India for 200-400 rupees, which is around like 5 euros. And it was actually December, January where that basically, you know, stopped. Like then I had to consciously cut costs on my nights, because your nights, and that's what many people, but also in India, but many people in the West realize, is that you don't need to waste money on your night. You know, it's like you just sleep and you leave the place where you slept, which is what most people do, but your rent is just ridiculously high. So no, I really cut massive costs on nights. And also now I'm staying with a friend's family, like a friend of a friend's family.
Nice.
So that's how I'm doing things right now. And it's been an amazing journey that way.
What do you feel most proud of about this project? What stood out for you? Is it the fact that you are at a point where you would have given up everything and gone back home? Or you would have just stayed on and, you know, followed with the project and traveled all over, visiting all these interesting people? And
I think many things stood out, but I think that at some point in, I think it was end of February something, March, where one of my interview subjects died. That was like a very bittersweet moment, because it was a moment where I was very happy with that I was almost done with the whole project, and very, you know,
happy about this.
But then that happiness got even like enhanced by the bitterness of his death. Like, it was a very like moment of life. I was basically crying out of both happiness and sadness, because Aditya, I interviewed him in January, and that was at a time where I just started to accept that I was gonna do the whole thing by myself. And he was a great guy. Like, he was so friendly, and he was such a supporter, and he told me to really champion the project, and he really told me to go for it. And at that time, I just interviewed Kiran Mazumdar-Shaw and Narayan Murthy, and he was very happy that I was doing this for all of them. Like, he really liked the fact that I was trying to cover something that had not been covered that much. And he really made me feel like I could do it, because it was still like, you know, you still don't know where you're gonna go. Like, you did do a couple of good things, but it's still not done. It's still not something. So he really reminded me of something that I forgot along the way, that I was doing it for them, basically. And that I was, you know, part of something bigger. And that is basically what really kept me going. And then I wanted to make him proud at the end of Feb. And I also wanted to add to his story, because we didn't shoot enough of his story, I thought. So I came back to Bangalore at that time. And I had an appointment with him on Friday. And I got forwarded to him by another friend and subject of the film, Sahil Mehta. And he suddenly sends me a text right after I get off the phone with my mom. You know, that was actually a pretty positive phone call, because I told her I'm going to stay here and just finish the whole project here, that I was not going to come back to the Netherlands yet, which was also a decisive moment. And he texts me, "I hope you know that Aditya Pasupuleti passed away. I thought you would want to know, because you also interviewed him." And Sahil had no idea that I, you know, hung out with the guy for like 2-3 days here. Yeah, I was at a poker event at that time with a friend of mine. So it wasn't like the right time to start breaking down. But that evening, before I went to bed, I had this whole nostalgic, euphoric moment where I was like, wow, projects, I'm going to dedicate the film to Aditya, and it has even more meaning now. So that's so that was definitely one of the other amazing stories that I had. Yeah,
it's kind of sad though, but
yeah, I hope his brother still wants to meet, because I told his brother like that I wanted to dedicate the film to him, and basically show him the material as well. But I don't know if he's here. He didn't reply yet, or it is maybe too tough to see that right now, because Aditya died as the only one on a bus from Hyderabad to Bangalore. And yeah, it's very sad, and it's supposed to be a accident prone area, and they didn't warn the other traffic about that. So it was one of those weird moments where you know, God decides for another human being that this has been your journey, and that was it. And he had an NGO for children. His whole startup was about a perspiratory device that he wanted to introduce into ambulances and help people survive the ambulance ride, because a lot of people die in the ride to the hospital, which is one of the saddest and most overcomable problems, actually. But he found a way to do that in a very affordable and effective way. And it's weird. It's very weird. I still see his face now because I'm working on the trailer, and it seems very close, like that I was there with him, because it was at such an amazing moment in my life where I was realizing that I was going to do a really interesting project by myself, and you know, in the middle of transformation. And on the other hand, it's really far away because he's really not there, and I didn't know him that well, so it's very, very strange.
Yeah.
So our meeting, like that's the basic catch. Like, I had so many meaningful meetings, which is the sadness in itself. So like, when you do a project like this, and I knew that from the beginning, is that you will need all of the people you meet for at least something, you know, but you will also have to say goodbye to them really soon after that. And there are a lot of people that I had very meaningful experiences with, but I probably will never see them again. And that's the privilege of doing a project like this, that you touch many people's lives, or you get to stay with people, or people help you out, and you know, people really want to help you succeed. And then after that, you also have to like let them go again, even though they they were of great importance to you at that time. So it's a double-edged situation with many of the people I met. So very happy I met so many people, and very sad that I also had to say goodbye to them. So
very interesting, Andreas. When do you think you're going to release this project, and when you're going to premiere it to the world out there?
I can't say yet. Like right now, I'm going to go back to my laptop and improve the trailer. And then I will try to do a short version of the film first. So I'm going to do the opening of the film. So that's like first 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And that's while the crowdfunding is going on. And then I will hope to either get the amount that I want to get the editor to do the whole project for the upcoming 2-3 months. Or I will take the 15 minutes back to the Netherlands, and I'll finish it there with some funding that I arranged there. But I'm definitely premiering it this year. Like, that's 100% sure. Yeah. So I can't say any dates, but it will be this year. Yeah, definitely. And then I'm going to tour with the film and give presentations about the whole project.
So that's going to be your next steps after you release the film. What future plans do you have?
I want to give like half hour lectures, 20 minute lectures about the film, and then show the film. And I want to start my next project at the same time, and be abroad. I'm not gonna stay in the Netherlands, that's for sure. I'll go back and meet my friends and family and do that, but I know that there will be something waiting on me on the other side of the world soon after that, so that's basically the goal. But first, let's get a good editor that's gonna become my best friend, and will be in the suite or studio every day working on it, and try to build the story, because I have no idea what it's gonna be. Like, it's gonna be a film that, yeah, it's gonna be made in the editing studio, like, completely. So let's see how we're gonna do that. I'm confident it's gonna be all right, but it's gonna be a tough task, because I need way more material than I have right now. Like, I need almost twice as much, maybe. Yeah, stock footage and music, pictures. So yeah, it's gonna be a tougher ride than I had. So the toughest stuff is still ahead. So yeah.
And how is the audience gonna access it? Like, through YouTube? Or?
I don't know. No, I'm not gonna put it on YouTube. That's for sure. I'm gonna put some stuff on YouTube, like content. I'll put it on YouTube. But no, the actual film, I wanna get a proper business deal out of it, because it's a passion project, but I also have to go back to the real world again and pay rent. So I do want to use it as a real project, you know, not just a documentary and then that's it. Show and talk about the development of India on a platform basis, with this film as a vehicle to do that. So in that sense, I want to do what Aditya told me to do, which is champion it, you know. Like, normally documentary filmmakers, they make a film and the film speaks for itself, which I like. For me, I like, you know, talk and use the content of the film as much as I did like to make the film. So that's why I want to bring it to the audiences in a different way than just YouTube. And
so you did filmmaking, right? So what advice would you give to your juniors or the guys who are just coming up in the filmmaking industry or documentary industry? What path would you like them to lead, or basically what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I'm not in a real place to advise them, but what I can tell them is that that we are living in a transformational period, that budgets are going to decrease and decrease, and that the way that stories are being told is also completely changing. And I think that the generation after me is actually finding their way better than my generation. Because, I studied in Denmark at the most, you know, most developed cinema the world has ever seen. But nobody cares about that anymore, you know. It was, it gained popularity again like 10 years ago, like real cinema. And then it all became series, which became the new cinema. But yeah, the other side is really just shooting with your phone. Like, you know, there's no in-between anymore. You're either going to become a series director or filmmaker, or you'll do the thing that I actually like the most, because I don't watch series, is become a, you know, online content creator, which is the most fun and, the most innovating to me. So all those old stories, they're becoming less and less relevant. So I think it's just best to just document and use your phone, and you'll definitely get an audience that way. So yeah, that would be my advice, to definitely not listen to other people or older people or something like that, because so much is happening, so much is possible, and there's not one way anymore. So I would not have wanted this project to be shot with a crew. Like, not at all.
No, but before you wanted a
crew. Yeah, because I had like a fixed way of how were supposed to go. You know, the way I basically grew up professionally. And that's just not the way. And even those people are now, you know, finding out that that's actually the case, that there's not one way to tell stories, you know, like, you have to understand that my previous production house, who, you know, got their successes in online commercials, and with a good budget also, most of them, even they are finding out, like, wow, the things that are going viral right now, or the things that get the most views, are basically just €0 videos. If that's the market, then maybe it's not as interesting to do it the way that we're doing it as it was before, because now anyone can do it.
Exactly, anyone with an iPhone
can
make a good documentary.
Exactly, and when that becomes the case, the ego of the people that used to have the access to, you know, television channels or budgets to make supposedly the best content, their egos get, you know, torn apart, because anyone can get a stage right now. Anyone can get attention right now. Anyone. So that's really happening right now. I think that just doing something weird or out of the ordinary is more welcome now than it was ever before, because even like David Lynch and those guys, they had a tough time, you know, they had a tough time with getting budgets, but I swear that if he had a mobile phone at that time, he would have made as crazy films as he did, but with a lower budget. So yeah, it's a very interesting time, and that's my advice, to just put yourself in a position where you have no way back, like I did. So yeah.
Cool. So coming to a closure, what is the one question that I've been asked that you would have expected me to ask?
Expected you to ask? I would have expected you to ask. No, I had no expectations, actually. No, I had zero expectations. Yeah, I really had no idea, because I this is still pretty early for me. Like, I love doing this podcast right now, but I'm so occupied with other stuff still. Like, that's also why I didn't listen to our previous podcast, because it's too early, man. It's still too early. Like, it's really not done yet. I don't know what it's gonna be. So it's still just a time document, what we're
exactly
making right now. It's still a, you know,
you get to know which stage you were after you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not necessarily interesting for other people, maybe. But
the kind of value you bring in is pretty good, though.
Yeah, cool. But I think that it's going to be a completely different podcast when I, you know, get to the point where I know what it's going to be. I also want to get there, man. Like, I'm on my last straw here. Like, I really feel that that it's coming to an end. Yeah, I really feel that these are the last 2-3 months. And I also know how fast 2-3 months go now. When you grow up, time goes faster and faster. That is definitely true. But yeah, this is where I am right now, man. I would have asked you to ask me where the premiere is going to be, for example. And if I can arrange it.
Where's the premiere going to be?
If I can, I will do the premiere in Bombay, because Bombay is my favorite city in India. And if I expected you to ask me another thing, I would have expected you to ask me where people can fund me for my crowdfunding campaign.
I was going to ask that. So, well, where do you get the funding? Like, obviously, I'll put all the links on the show notes. I'm guessing it's going to be Kickstarter.
Yeah, I chose Kickstarter, so please support Made in India on Kickstarter. So if you have some spare change left, please donate and make me rich. No, just help me to get an editor and finish this project properly, and get a sound designer also, you know, bring this project out into the world in a way that has not been done before. I will be forever grateful.
All right, on that note, we're going to come to a close to this awesome podcast where we spoke all about Andreas's project and the tales he had to tell. So guys, please do check out all the links on our show notes. And please support Andreas for this wonderful project that he's undertaken. And we wish him all the very best. And we'll have him in the future as well once his project goes all the way. All right, guys. Thanks. And please subscribe, like, and share this podcast on iTunes. Cheers. Cheers. All right. See you, Andreas.
Thanks, man. I had a great time. Thank you for inviting me.
All right. Peace.
Peace out. Where are you?